Welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Every few years, C-SPAN gathers a panel of distinguished historians who rank the presidents of the United States on their leadership. Among the big questions this year was, where would Donald Trump rank the first time he was eligible to be reviewed? How are other presidents being viewed these days? Who's ascending and who's dropping? Two names which we'll get to later, Ulysses S. Grant and Andrew Jackson. Here with us to discuss these latest rankings are two members of C-SPAN's Presidential Rankings Advisory Board. They are Amity Schley, she's an author and chairwoman of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. Amity, good morning. Richard Norton Smith is back with us. He's a presidential biographer and an original member of the C-SPAN Presidential Advisory Team. Among many distinctions, Richard was the founding director of the Bob Dole Institute of Politics over at KU and founding director of the Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, Illinois. Richard, always good to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. Good to talk with you.
Amity, why does C-SPAN conduct these periodic reviews of the presidents and their historical standing? What's the point here?
Well, C-SPAN is interested in what America thinks, and there's no better way than to ask America. So it's a wonderful thing that C-SPAN does this poll. This is the fourth. Richard's been on it a long time. And we did broaden the number of historians and writers and thinkers we added to our list. So, you know, when you're curious about somebody, you listen, and that's what C-SPAN's good at. So we're very proud of this poll, which took months and months of serious work by C-SPAN to make it upright, to make it thorough, and to make it broad.
You know, Richard, as I mentioned in the opening, you were on the original advisory team and helped come up with these criteria that we are used to measure the presidents. Run through us, if you would, some of the criteria that you fall back on here.
Well, actually, Steve, some of them are predictable and indeed reflect what you might call traditional criteria. For example, how a president handles the economy. More recently, your neighbor Harry Truman famously said that the chief business of the modern presidency is persuasion. Well, you know, there are great communicators, and there are less great communicators. That's one factor. But we also added some criteria to reflect changes in the office. You know, the presidency in the 20th century was a very different office from what it was in the 19th century. But also to reflect changes in the culture. So, for example, there is a particular criteria that mentions the pursuit of justice. Again, something that can be defined in many ways, but certainly anticipates our current interest, to put it mildly, in the pursuit of racial justice. Huh. And there's also kind of a catch-all category, which is, how a president performed in the context of his times. Because the fact is, there are wartime presidents, there are presidents who deal with economic crises, and then there are presidents who deal with a more placid period. So it's an attempt to be flexible, just as the office is flexible.
Amity, how challenging a job, you know, is it for historians and other of these thinkers to rate all these presidents on these different standards? Because it strikes me as a pretty big mouthful here.
It's a pretty big mouthful, and you're allowed to decline to rate a president, which is good. If you're not familiar, but I will say when you're you know, you're pouring over these presidents. Well, who is Polk again, and what exactly did he do? And what do I make of Eisenhower's signature of the 1957 Civil Rights Act? You know, or what do I make? So it's good homework for the judges. Mostly, it's review homework, hopefully, rather than new material. But I encourage teachers to use this poll and have their students answer it. And then justify, why are you ranking this president this way and another this way? And what's wrong, by the way, with Andrew Jackson? And what's so right? And why all of a sudden did Lyndon Johnson go down a little bit? Why isn't he higher, given that we're emulating the Great Society, his program now? I mean, it's a great classroom tool. and it's all set up. I just think it's a way to ask ourselves what we think and where we are.
Well, just for the record, I'm fascinated by these rankings every few years and just pore over them. I'm always interested. So, Richard, I guess the headline out of this survey is Donald Trump standing. Where did he finish, and why do you think he finished where he did?
Well, he finished 41st.
That's not too good.
Three presidents. There are three presidents below him. By the way, the same presidents who have finished in the same positions in every single one of the C-SPAN surveys. I mean, it's really remarkable. We talk about Trump, and I understand the kind of preoccupation with Trump. But the in some ways, the big story about this is the stability at both ends. In other words, Lincoln, Washington, FDR, those three presidents have been at the top in every survey.
Right.
Pierce, Buchanan, and Andrew Johnson have been at the bottom. Donald Trump, first of all, you have to also remember this survey was taken, I believe most of it was at least was taken after January 6th. That's not insignificant. Mm-hmm. For many people, that is a defining event, not only in the Trump presidency, but in modern American history, the reverberations of which, you know, we don't know. The other thing you need to know for those Trump fans out there, you need to remember presidents traditionally leave office at the nadir of their reputations.
Yes.
If you look at Ike, if you look at Truman,
Harry Truman, Reagan, yeah, very famously. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Or George W. Bush, who came up in this survey fairly significantly. So there's that. On the other hand, you know, Trump has broken all the other rules about the presidency, so he may break that one as well.
Hmm. How about Barack Obama, Amity? He broke into the top 10 in this survey. That's up a little bit from his 12th place showing in 2017, the last time you guys did this survey. It's not a huge jump, but what might account for that?
I'll give you a counterintuitive answer. It's my impression that more reflective presidents are doing better. George W. Bush, Calvin Coolidge, talking my books, I did write Coolidge's biography, and President Obama, kind of a quieter presidents who pick their words carefully when they speak and don't speak as freely as some others. Contrast, say, President Obama with President Johnson, who was a motor mouth. That showed up, and I do think that was part of the Trump reaction. It is controversial to ask a bunch of historians, that would be this group, to rate a president who's just leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And the question Richard and C-SPAN, Brian Lamb, Susan Swain address is, should we even be doing this? And that isn't a good question. We don't feel it's wrong because we create a benchmark. But it, as Richard said, hindsight may be more useful 12 years hence. And I would suggest that some of the presidents who did better did better because of civil rights, unquestionably Grant, for example, but others because they may be more of an anti-Obama. I was trying to figure out why Coolidge did better, the one I like, and hopefully that's because of the hard work of the Coolidge Foundation. But it's also because Coolidge is a different kind of Republican. Essentially what you're doing when you run a president just when he's left office, and when he may run for president again one day, right,
mm-hmm.
is you're asking, would you vote for this guy, which is a completely different question. And even historians who do try to be objective, we can only pursue objectivity. We can never be totally objective, of course, are colored by the time they're making the judgment. And by the way, I will add, we like that. Because now we have a benchmark. We're not unhappy about it. But, of course, you know, these factors are considerations.
You know, Richard, you mentioned that the top finishers in this survey, FDR, Lincoln, Washington, Teddy Roosevelt, and Eisenhower, the top three have been in the top now for any number of surveys. Does that begin to suggest that concrete is beginning to set around these top few presidents?
Well, I refer to them as the Holy Trinity, Washington, Lincoln, and FDR. Washington in the 18th century, Lincoln in the 19th, and FDR in the 20th. Each in his own way confronted a crisis, went to the survival of the nation, and indeed of democracy as we have come to define it, and how they confronted and ultimately overcame that crisis. Also, let's face it, redefined the office, and in some ways reset the course that the country was on. The office, you know, is very different from what the founders envisioned. They envisioned that the presidency would not be the dominant agenda setter. And so that's where 19th century presidents, as a rule, operate at a disadvantage in this survey, because we've all come to expect, particularly in the media age, you know, the president is the focus of attention. I have suggested, picking up off of what Andy was just talking, and I haven't gotten anyone to agree with me, that there ought to be a 20-year rule. And that is to say, you stop and think of the presidents in the last 20 years. Each one, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, they've all been, quote, polarizing, divisive figures. Richard Nixon said it would take 50 years before anyone could write objectively about him. I think in some ways, the way the modern media culture operates, we are doomed, for the foreseeable future at least, to have presidents who are, through no fault of their own, quote, polarizing. And that obviously affects how contemporary historians are going to assess their performance.
Right. You know, Richard, I'm struck by the finish of Dwight Eisenhower, our man from Abilene, who's, I think, finished fifth in this latest survey, up from ninth in 2000. What brought about his rise in the eyes of historians? You once ran his library out in Abilene. I remember spending a Saturday afternoon out in Eisenhower's private office. You showed me around one day. What accounts for his rise?
Well, when he left office in 1961, Arthur Schlesinger conducted a survey of historians, and I came in 22nd.
Wow.
Which is worse than it sounds, because there are a lot fewer presidents. He was ranked below Chester Arthur. All right. Then several things happened. In 1966, his papers were opened, and all of a sudden we began, once we looked at the actual documentation, to see a very different Eisenhower from the stereotypical figure whose syntax was scrambled. And an academic named Fred Greenstein at Princeton wrote a very influential book called The Hidden Hand President. Huh. And the fact is, we began to reassess. Eisenhower was not like FDR. He was not a bully pulpit president. He was someone who worked behind the scenes. That's how he had succeeded in World War II, bringing together a very disparate group of generals and leaders, and that's how he worked in the White House. And over time, also, guess what? Something happened called the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War. The country went through years of turmoil. And all of a sudden, the 1950s began to look a lot better in retrospect. Relative peace, relative prosperity. And so the fact that Eisenhower averted crisis rather than managed crisis invited a whole fresh school of assessment, not only of his presidency, but of the presidency generally.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about a C-SPAN survey of our presidents conducted by a group of distinguished historians and what the results of that survey suggest. My two guests, Amity Schles, chairwoman of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation, Richard Norton Smith, a presidential biographer, original member of the C-SPAN Presidential Advisory Team. Richard, one more thing I wanted to ask you, and I got a kick out of this. At number six is our own Harry Truman. he's remained pretty steady over the years as well. Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower had a very up and down relationship over many years. There are our two presidents from my neck of the woods out here. If the two of them knew back in 1952, Richard, when Eisenhower won the presidency for the first time, that one day they would be ranked the fifth and sixth best presidents in the history of the country, you can't help but wonder how that might have affected their very mercurial relationship.
Well, they would have had a lot to discuss.
They might have had a little more respect for each other, too, I think. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Both of them left office, in a way, under a cloud. I mean, Eisenhower was personally popular, but he was certainly not popular among the academics who vote in surveys like this. Truman, on the other hand, enjoyed relatively more respect from the academic community, but he left office, as you know, famously, with very low public opinion ratings. But just as the passage of time and subsequent events boosted Eisenhower considerably, so likewise Harry Truman. You know, Truman was really rediscovered in the 70s, right after his death.
Mm-hmm.
People contrasted Harry Truman, plain, unvarnished, plain speaking, truth telling, name calling, authentic Harry Truman with Watergate America.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Truman looked awfully good. And so time has been generous to both presidents. By the way, it's worth knowing, the two of them actually had a reconciliation
yes.
of sorts.
Yes, they
you
did.
You know, famously, at the time of JFK's death and funeral, they met the day of the funeral in Blair House across the street
yes.
from the White House, and had a far-ranging, even historic conversation that I think put to rest, you know, a lot of the animosities that had grown up when they were more politically active.
That's a great story. I once wrote about it. There's a lot to think about there. Amity, let's turn to the fast risers and the fast fallers in this survey. You have to conclude that Ulysses S. Grant is on the march again, this time in these historical rankings. He was number 33 in 2000. Today he's number 20. What's going on there?
Well, I think we got to give credit to Ron Chernow.
Hmm.
Who wrote a biography
right.
of Grant that's very popular. Ron is also the author of the Hamilton book that inspired the musical Hamilton.
Right.
So that is an example of books that changed our culture. The rest of us authors admire that, and here you have the quantification. Another is Ulysses S. Grant's devotion to civil rights, to the African Americans in the South. What's interesting to me is that Grant was kind of a mess politically. When you study Warren Harding mm-hmm. and his scandals, you think, where did Harding get the idea he could be sloppy and get away with scandals or see his people get away with scandals? And one of them was Grant. But I think Grant's troubles of managing the office of containing corruption are forgotten. So that's an example of where civil rights and popular works about the President Trump, to use our verb here, other factors. Bill Clinton is down. He's a president who many people like, but did have some screw-ups, as we said, you know, things that distracted from his political agenda, his policy agenda. But Grant is not, by the same token. I don't know why President Clinton is down. He achieved a lot, including basically bringing us to a balanced budget. Coolidge would applaud. So, you can't always explain what you see. Some of this is trade-offs. One of the things I often talk about in public is presidents aren't athletes, right? This is not a league. Really. So there's a limit to how valuable a zero-sum game or ranking is for this crowd. You don't have to hate Coolidge to love Franklin Roosevelt. It should be additive. It is additive. It's not baseball. So there's a limit to what you can get out of a system like this, because you have to force someone down when you raise someone else up.
Well, where did Bill Clinton finish in this?
I think he's 19 now, down four.
And where's that George W. Bush?
George Bush is up. Let me look up the number. But George Bush, that's what I was going to move to, is interestingly up a lot. And that's the effect Richard and the others have spoken about of a little bit of distance. I worked a bit with President Bush at the Bush Library. I worked at his presidential center for a while. And one thing about President Bush, he did not say much after the presidency because he wanted to show respect for his predecessors. Overall, let's see, right now he's 29. He was 33, and before that, 36. That's a big increase. Why? One is he did understand about political capital. George Bush wanted to clean up, or at least have a clean presidency. And he said he was the one who said, I don't want political capital is limited, and I don't want to squander it effectively. Don't know if he articulated this, but it was clear, including by scandal. So I'll do what I can to minimize scandal. He was a well-behaved man in the presidency, and he's been a quiet man since. He works a lot with veterans. He paints beautiful and interesting paintings of immigrants and wounded vets. He does charity in Africa, including one a key charity relating to detecting cervical cancer. But he's been silent, and that has stood him in good stead. Wouldn't you agree, Richard? Mm.
Well, you know, former presidents have an advantage over presidents. You know, why do we talk about elder statesmen? They're elder because they are no longer partisan. Mm-hmm. They're no longer party leaders.
Right.
And that's one reason why over time we tend to give former presidents in some ways the benefit of the doubt that we withheld while they were in the middle of the arena battling for their party against the opposition.
You know, Richard, Andrew Jackson, I wanted to note his finish here. He's headed in the opposite direction. He's losing ground in the eyes of historians. Why would that be?
Well, he's plummeted, and I suspect he's bouncing around, frankly, like corn in a popper.
Huh.
The fact is, for most of the 20th century, again, to go back to the Schlesinger School of the presidency, Jackson was in the top 10. He's certainly regarded as one of the most consequential president. He's the first populist president. He was the first Western president. And there are a whole lot of firsts. However, today we're much less inclined to see Jackson as a champion of frontier democracy than we are to see him as an Indian killer, as a slaveholder. And again, at this time, with the emphasis, remember, again, this is a survey taken after the George Floyd killing and at the height of Black Lives Matter. And Jackson has been slipping ever since we started taking this survey. And this is a process that accelerated this time around. I don't think it's permanent. I think, if you came back 20 years from now, it might very well be that Jackson bounces back up.
Well, fascinating stuff. This is a C-SPAN survey of presidential leadership over the years. You just heard the voice of Richard Norton Smith, a presidential biographer, founding director of the Bob Dole Institute of Politics at KU. Amity Schles also joined us, an author and chairwoman of the Kelvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. Both of you, thanks for a great conversation. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.